This is Unstuck in Time with a very old theme. Maybe it sounds pompous after all this while. I wonder. Well. It's all here. Still works. Already did my first miscue of the season. It's all still here. Amazing. Hard to believe. This is Margot Adler, and this is Unstuck in Time, which the first program of ostensibly a new season of programs. And there's always this strange feeling coming back to this place, to this room, not knowing who of the old folks are there and who of the old folks are not there and new folks are not there, and whether how much I have to start from scratch and how many have listened to this program before. But more often, moreover, there's that feeling of coming into this room and for the first minute terror strikes. All the machines seem to have taken on human personality once more. They all growl out and say, you will forget something, some little button to press at the right time. And all the little cues and everything else seem to be, for at least the first couple of times, my mortal enemy. It's funny, I was here in New York most of July. And in fact, was only really away for August. And I remember coming back in July and being in and out of the station in July, although I didn't do any programs. And some listener calling up and seeming to be dying to wait or not being able to wait till I would talk about some fabulous, beautiful, incredibly exotic vacation that I had, and which everybody else could live through vicariously, which of course did happen a couple of years ago when I spent 2 months in the Sierras. But in fact, this vacation, while rather lovely, was the lesson in how to freeload when you're poor. That was the lesson of this vacation. I freeloaded quite well with numerous surrogate parents, uncles, aunts, friends' uncles, friends' aunts, and managed in a month to be able to go to Martha's Vineyard, Nantucket, Mount Desert Island, Monhegan, Salem, Walden Pond, Concord, Lexington, Provincetown, all kinds of ways, only spending one night in a hotel room. That's a feat. you have to have a lot of addresses and a lot of friends and relatives around to do that. And that's what I did. And there was an awful lot of pleasure and a lot of psychic cost in it. And there was one lesson learned, and that was you're never alone unless you're alone. And that there is a psychic cost from freeloading that is hard to judge until you return. So I freeloaded my way through New England this summer, and learned mostly personal things, how many of which have really a great relevance to this program is really unclear. I had one experience which I think of very often. It actually was an experience that happened over a year ago but was reinforced on a short visit I had to some town in New England, which will remain anonymous for the moment. It's one of those lessons of life that come so easily when you are shocked into them. When I was in high school, there was a young woman there who represented to me everything that one is supposed to be by the tenets of the society. That is, she always came into school with starched kind of white blouses and subdued plaid pleated skirts. Not only was she an A student all through high school, but she was valedictorian, if I remember correctly, of her class. If I remember correctly, she went to certainly the college of her choice. And my memory of this woman is one who did all the things that at some point in my life I tried to do and failed. I'm not sure that any of this thing or any of these characteristics were really true about her, you understand. They were characteristics that I observed from a distance, and I probably read them into her character when actually she probably was much fuller, much more complex than a view that I sustained by the fact that I was so opposite from her. And I've since learned that afterwards she became a rebel in many, many ways and was not this picture that I have had of her. But for whatever the reason, I constructed that picture or the picture existed, and there was this woman who was that picture of goodness and competitive, subtle femininity plus grades from my past. A year ago, I was standing in front of my building where I live, my apartment building, and a neighbor was chatting with another older woman. And she said, oh, you know Margot, oh, this is such and such's mother. And I realized that this was the mother of the very woman who had for me been that symbol again of everything that one was supposed to be and yet succeeded in some way. And I said, oh, how is so-and-so? And she said, well, we really don't know. You see, she went down and she was sailing and there was an accident and she went down. And we don't know if she went down. We don't know if there was an accident. We don't know. There's nothing that's been found. This was 6 months ago. We have no idea if she's lost or dead or if she just disappeared. At that time, I was overwhelmed with the strangest feeling of
Well, it's hard to explain, but I was overwhelmed with a feeling as if this was a signal event in my life, even though I hadn't known her really well. I mean, I knew her, but hadn't really been close with her. And this summer, I again met the woman. Just a chance meeting, walking through a New England town. And found out that, in fact, 2 years later, no traces had ever been found. This young woman was officially declared dead. And in fact, not only had this woman disappeared with someone else in a sailboat, but it had happened at the place where the Bermuda Triangle is. At that point, I was so filled with an understanding of how, for the first time, how all those goals that I intellectually knew were really worthless. The things I had struggled for in high school, the fact that I had put away real learning for a kind of mindless grubbing for grades and stuff, which I always knew and hated and felt was poisonous, but yet somehow could not rid myself of as a person. It was almost as if that experience and hearing about it confirmed in me in a personal way the truth of how everything that I had realized was poisonous to strive for really was poisonous to strive for, how it didn't matter at all. And it's funny that of all the things that happened this summer, of all the fantastic places that I went to and people I saw and beautiful lakes and oceans, that experience stands out really the clearest in my mind. Because I guess I realized that I had never gotten rid of many of the goals that I, in my own mind, I had envied this woman for striving for, if she ever strove for them, because again, it may only have been in my imagination. Everything had a certain kind of perspective. All the years of my adolescence, which were perhaps, as they are for almost everyone, certainly the most painful and off-the-wall period of life, which, if you're going through it, just the only advice I could give is, boy, is it nice once it's over. Anyway, that was the experience of the summer that struck me the most. And I guess it has nothing to do with summers or vacations or anything else. I've come back in a very different frame of mind. And it's hard to know how long that frame of mind will stick. I'm going to be doing Unstuck in Time 2 days a week instead of 3 days a week, Friday and Sunday. And that's because I am a volunteer for the station this year. And the reason for that is that I, to my utter fright, got a book contract to write a book on the resurgence of paganism in the United States. And if you've listened to my previous programs, you know something about what that's all about. And I actually, five weeks ago, signed a contract to write the book, and now I'm just scared out of my mind about doing it. So I'm only going to do my program twice a week. The other thing that vacations do is they allow you to, how can one say this? I think the most creative part of vacations are the fact that they allow you, when you come back, to see your own world with a crystalline, clear perspective. I found myself being incredibly blunt to people. People to whom, over long years of time, I had evolved a way of dealing with them that involved being so nice and sweet, and suddenly I was very flippant, as if all those ways that we are, that are so comfortable for us to be, those little social graces, suddenly were knocked out of me. I find that sitting here in this room is very difficult because I have to suddenly censor myself. I have to say things slightly differently if it is only for purposes of the FCC. I have to be conscious and guarded in a way that I find coming back after 2 months is very difficult to be. And I think that experience of going away anywhere and coming back to a situation is the real, if there is such a thing as the real, purpose behind vacations. I found myself being blunt. I found myself looking at the things that I did very frankly. I found myself being very conserving of my own time and energies. I do not know if I'm going to answer letters this year. And if so, very few. I felt a great need to preserve minutes, time. And of course, I'm also very, very scared about all the new things I've gotten into. One of the things I did this summer was I went to Akwesasne, which is upstate New York, near the Canadian border. And that's where Akwesasne Notes is published. If you've been listening to the programs that Natasha and Ralph Fryer have done, you probably know something about Akwesasne. It is perhaps the best, one of the best political newspapers. It is perhaps the only newspaper that on the one hand is the story of a particular group of people's struggles, Native American struggles, but since it is of a people with a language and a history and a culture and a religion, it is one of the few places where and activist politics can merge with what I always I'd like to call a pagan, earth-rooted consciousness, and without it being simpering and lovey and truly off the wall, which it is in so many cases. I came back to New York, I found my mailbox filled, absolutely filled, with thousands and thousands of notices to come to such and such a conference on the New Age. I'm really getting sick of the New Age. It's so flippant. Thousands of conferences merging yoga and astrology and this and that and everything, most of which I have supported and certainly do not consider myself in the vanguard of the rationalists. But I started getting all this mail in my mailbox when I started coming back, and I really started feeling, oh God, another bit of consciousness. If I hear the word New Age consciousness, Aquarian Age consciousness, used flippantly one more time, I will really throw up. So when I went to Akwesasne, I saw that it was possible to merge those things that all of last year's programs were talking about. That is, the merging of the political and the spiritual in a way that is not a cop-out on the society. And it has to be done very clearly and concisely, because that's part of the argument that's going on right now in a host of different places. And it's probably the direction in which this program will go. Boy, I feel like I'm sermonizing, but I just have to, it's the first, just think of it this way, it's the first program, I have to get all this stuff out of my system, and then it's going to probably lapse back into its old self, and I'll have all kinds of guests, and music, and Lori Lieberman is coming a week from Friday, so, you know, it's not going to all be like this. I just have to get this all out of my system, because it's been 2 months. But anyway, I think that there were lots of themes that were started last year. There were all the programs dealing with Rojak and the question of science and technology and my own somewhat apocalyptic Luddite Neolithic stand on life, which someone called me, a friend of mine called me a Stone Age Stalinist the other day. It was really freaked me out no end. Said I wanted to go back to the past no matter what the means. And the frightening part of what he said was that there was a certain strong element of truth to it. But anyway, part of what I want to do on the show, besides have assorted interesting guests of various kinds and music and other things, is the same thing that in part I want to do in the research for this book. And that is to figure out if there is that synthesis that I keep on hoping to find. I just have to spew out some more stuff on New Age consciousness. I was sitting listening to that program that was on BAI the other night on ARE. Now, I have to admit, I'd only heard about 4 minutes of the entire program, and it may have been an absolutely great program and filled with all kinds of wonderful advice. I mean, it wasn't on ARE. It was on Casey and Riley and so forth. And I only heard a few minutes, but I turned on the radio just at the time when some woman on the program was saying, oh, well, you know, Casey was had a former life as a priest in an Egyptian temple. And Riley, well, he was a musician or a head musician in the very same temple. And then she kind of laughed. And I sat there and I thought, wow, I'm ready to believe it all, but how can you be blasé? How can you just sort of say, oh, well, yes, as if you're sure, you know, as if you're really sure. And that's what's really funny, is to see the kind of unconscious elements of totalitarianism that creep into everybody's trip. On the other side, you have this ridiculous thing in the New York Times of 186 scientists come out to cry that astrologers are charlatans. I mean, come on. If they really wanted to get 186 scientists together to talk about, let's say, something they were really cognizant of, like the misuses of science, misuses of technology, but of course they couldn't get those same scientists together, because then they'd have to do something which would be much more politically hot, right? It's so easy to sit around and make a statement against astrology, whereas, as far as I'm concerned, it's to make a statement against astrologers is like making a statement against psychiatrists, because in many cases they serve the same function, and that means there's some real artists among them, and also some charlatans. And they do pretty much the same work with seemingly equal success, except that the astrologers seem to be cheaper. Boy, I'm really pontificating in a weird way. I tell you, I've just come back and I'm really, you look at the world with a whole view that is totally blunt and ridiculous, right? Anyway, I've come back on the one hand with all this stuff in my box. All this new age, insipid stuff. But yet, it's not to be condemned totally, because a lot of it really is valuable information, valuable new techniques, or old techniques sustained, things that are important for daily living. All of that stuff is absolutely valuable. But it has to be put in a context somehow. Of real day-to-day living. And that's why going up to Akwesasne, where you have a situation where people are going back to the old religion, they are going back to the longhouse religion, for example, in small percentage, 90-something, I don't know, some huge percent of the reservation up there is Catholic. But there are people who are struggling slowly back to the longhouse religion of the Mohawk. You talk to the people who put out the Akwesasne notes, you talk to Lalihokwats, and you find people who on the one hand are living in a state where they have to struggle politically and also understand, have a certain kind of spiritual foundation from which they flow. And I'm beginning to think you have to make distinctions. Very difficult, hard distinctions to make. Distinctions that you have to come from a position that is in its nature rebellious. And I guess my own embracing of a pagan consciousness has always been more acceptable to me personally, because I have the image, the historical image, the historical images of witches as a persecuted class in not only a religious but in a social and economic sense. I think you have to have a fountain of a rebelliousness somewhere in the back there. Otherwise, all your talk about the New Age is kind of insipid and weak and very depressing. I came back to have a conversation with Arnie, who have listened to this program will remember, and who've listened to BAI in general. And he told me that he mentioned hosts of articles in the women's movement, or articles by various women that are taking up that very same question in a very different way. The question of the split between political organizing and activity, and the whole concept of the goddess and the matriarchal view, woman as nurturer, mother right. And there apparently have been article and article and articles and articles and articles talking about those kinds of questions, and I think those are certainly questions that really should be talked about on this program, I think. And I even went out and bought Ms. Where is it? I went and bought Ms. and some other things because, oh, where is it? Oh, here it is. Oh, I should digress yet again to say that I have been just starting reading Jacob Needleman's The New Religions, which came out in around 1970 as about the teachings of the East. And it seems to be quite interesting, although what he apparently is doing is discussing a new religious consciousness almost entirely in terms of male Eastern gurus, apparently very well, but he also talks very interestingly about his own background and how he was unprepared to accept a lot of the things that were being said. He has, I had one little quote I wanted to read you. He talks in the beginning, his introduction is really good. I came to San Francisco in 1962, quite sure that I understood the place of religion in the history and psychology of man. Having been trained as a philosopher at the best New England universities, I was able to speak sympathetically about the depths of man's religious imagination, while retaining what I felt was a cold and critical eye toward his need to deny his mortal nature as a creature of the earth. At the same time, some practical experience as a clinical psychologist had confirmed my belief that contemporary psychology in all its forms addressed itself only to a small portion of the human psyche. I had cast my lots with the existentialists. Man's real burden was an unlimited psychological freedom bound in some mysterious and ironic way to the limitations of the body, death, and the other. And he goes on to how he couldn't accept mysticism. All this talk about merging into the all, destroying the self. I labeled it confidently mysticism, when man's essential task was to affirm and preserve his self and to increase his individuality. And all this talk about ineffable experience, incomprehensible truths, going beyond the ordinary mind, that rankled. I was very suspicious of anyone who claimed to know something but was unable to express it. In sum, I thought of mysticism as simply bad poetry, the poetry of men too weak to accept the joys and sufferings of our earthly nature. Then he says, but if science had reduced man to less than he was, he says he was ready to denounce the natural scientific view of man as reductionist. But if science had reduced man to less than he was, the religions of the East inflated man to more. And then he goes to describe his kind of transformation, how he went to California and, as a transplanted Easterner, felt duty-bound not to take anything in California very seriously. I certainly felt no need to understand California. I simply allowed myself to record the usual impressions, millions of Americans breaking away from reality, looking for a dream, everything in excess, forest, lawn, cemetery, which I never visited, the charm of San Francisco, an American island in time, the giant trees, a thunderously rugged coastline. When natives told me this was where it was happening, I was quite ready to believe them simply because I had no real hopes for the future anyway. To me, California was a place desperately lacking in experience of limitation, a dream factory in every sense of the word. No wonder all these cults and sects were flourishing. And then he goes to show how he sort of changed his whole view of this. And apparently it's a very interesting book. The only thing is that he, as I said, he basically is only analyzing Eastern and male-oriented, particularly religious movements. There are Eastern, not totally male-oriented, but doesn't really analyze those, I don't believe. I haven't come to the end of the book. Anyway, I started reading that, and I also started looking in Ms. Magazine to kind of regard or kind of take a look at the beginnings of some of these articles that were being referred to me. And there I came across an interesting quote from Robin Morgan in a long article that she has here, which essentially is a retrospective on the entire movement. Let me find it. She has a religious statement, which is kind of interesting, where she talks about, I'm going to try to have her on the program if she will come on. Where is it? It is a very difficult magazine to find things in. They keep on losing themselves. Oh, hopeless. 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 74. Ah, here it is. She talks a bit about the spiritual quest in a way that I think is quite good, particularly in regard to that, the questions that have been taken up a lot on this program in regard to kind of looking into the older, ancient, pre-Christian, matriarchal religions. She's talking in a retrospective about the women's movement, and she says, "Developments have not been limited to the physical and material sphere. A spiritual hunger is being expressed by women. I don't mean a hunger for the opiate of the people, or escapism, or a fad like the one which gooses frantic followers into chasing after plump, rich teenage boy for the truth and the light. On the contrary, this new spirituality transcends all such simplicities. It is the birth of a genuine feminist metaphysics. It is as if women were realizing that, to paraphrase Mary Daly, the ultimate degradation foisted on any oppressed people is a thievery of the right to name ourselves and our relation to the universe. And so, while some sisters continue to batter away at the discrimination from within patriarchal religions, those dear uppity nuns, those intrepid women ministers and rabbis and priests, many other women are researching the original matriarchal faiths and philosophies which most anthropologists now agree predated patriarchal ones, and there is an accompanying revival of interest in Wicca or the craft of the wise, witchcraft as the highly sophisticated and lyrical nature philosophy it is, not the satanic weirdo fringe that the patriarchy would have us believe it is. Most important, all these psychic and religious explorations are part of a process of affirming the complexity of the universe and the divinity in each of us. How different from the dogmatic pronouncements, from the centuries-old misogyny which still blames Eve for the fall, and which burned millions of her daughters at the stake. How refreshing and fitting to be able to conceive of the life force as a creatrix, one which our own female creative bodies reflect. The possibilities opened up by such thought are tremendously exciting. Oh, I have the mother of us all moments when I stir the chicken soup and worry that these concepts can be too easily trivialized, reduced into excuses which might sound like, oh, goody, now we can pray to the mother goddess for freedom, and it will fall like womana from heaven, so we don't have to organize or work to bring it about. But I also know that the process is a tempering one, and for every woman who gets mired in the spiritualism as an excuse, there will be many more who will be strengthened, affirmed, and energized by spirituality. Praise the goddess and pass the petition, as it were, which is fortunate because I assume that the goddess is a feminist and would not be amused at being expected to pick up after others' messes." That, a small quote from a very long article by Robin Morgan in the current issue of Ms., the September 1975 issue of Ms. I have been rambling exceedingly. I started out wanting to be very blunt, and I guess I really wasn't very blunt. Or maybe I was. But I guess I'll take some calls in a little while. I want to play a little music. And we'll take a few calls. I don't know how many, how much, but I guess my feeling is that the program will continue somewhat as before. I'm not sure I'm as nice. Well, I came back feeling very clear-eyed. I don't know how long that's going to last. It's very easy to get back into one's own old ruts. And it's very, very easy to get back into a kind of a situation where one is just giving every group its say on the air, even though you don't like the group and you don't really feel they should be on the air, and all that, which I did a little of last year, and kind of feel a bit bad about, actually. I think the program will deal a lot with feminist issues, but not only, obviously. And it will come to be whatever both myself and you make it, as you all know. And that's always been the case. And maybe I'll take a few calls, I don't know, on all this and any responses that seem legitimate. I'm much less blunt than I was 2 days ago. You should have heard me then. And we'll see what we shall see. But I've got to take a break from this. This is WBAI in New York. This is Unstuck in Time.
I love the light. I love the changing season. I love without much thought to reason. I'd give it all if I could make you see. I love the man that you were meant to be. I love the man you are in me. I love the man who waits beside you. I love the man who hides behind you. Comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She knows everything you do because the woman in your life is you. The woman in your life knows simply what is true. She knows a simple way make you whole now. The woman in your life, she can touch so easily. She knows everything you do because the woman in your life.
Hello. Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. As I said, I've been waiting for you to come back so I could talk to you. I'm a strange creature of this time because, how can I describe myself? I don't know where to start. I'm a New Yorker. I'm a feminist. I'm not a joiner.
Mm-hmm.
Yet I find that there are certain things one needs to do in company of other people in order to raise certain energies, whether it be political activism or spiritual energies or whatever. You must at some point make a compromise or an agreement with certain people to work with them. And every time I have tried to do it, especially this summer, I find that I come back to the same old thing, which is that you can only depend on yourself, and that people left and right are just waiting there to screw you royally if you give them half a chance. And it doesn't seem to matter what attitude you go at them with. If you go at them humbly, you get stepped on. If you go at them arrogantly, you're stepping on. And it doesn't seem feasible to me, after my experiences up to this point, to work with people in a congenial fashion. And I'm despairing of that, because the organizations that I've been going to hold themselves up to be right-thinking, and, you know, their public attitude or their public image is just so much better than what they're really like when you get inside them. And, you know, you kind of find out why nothing ever gets accomplished. It's because their heads are just,
what,
know, in the same petty places.
What kind of, can you be a little bit more specific about kind of the things that you went through during the summer? And
well, let's start with home. I went to BAI to volunteer.
Okay.
And I got... I went for two reasons. One was to volunteer and to get involved and meet some of the people there, because to me, BAI is doing a lot of good things. And what I found out is a lot of the people who do the best programming have nothing to do with the administration of the place. I could kind of see why. And because the place is so chaotic and because people are trying to do six jobs at once, they don't do any of them properly.
Mm.
And promises were made to me that were never intended to be kept. And I was functioning in that capacity when I went up there. I was going to work in a certain office, and I was perfectly willing to do that work,
mm-hmm,
irregardless. But I don't want to go into who it
okay,
was.
Okay, yeah, you don't know. So please, you know.
Yeah, but, you know, promises were made to me, and they were not made in good faith, and it not only screwed me up, but a lot of other people, too.
Okay.
Depending on me.
Okay.
I went to the American Indian Community House to work, and they took all of the information that I had to give them as far as certain things that they were trying to set up as far as community programs with helping with getting health care and that kind of stuff for their people. And once I'd gotten a whole bunch of pamphlet information and run all over the city to get all kinds of information from them, they never called me to have me come work for them. And I had 3 months this summer that I could have worked for them. They never called me and found anything for me to do for them.
This was on a volunteer basis?
Yeah.
Why didn't you call them?
I did, repeatedly.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, you know, we're just getting organized and, like, you know, blah, 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 blah. And time just wasted away, and that was that, you know. And I just think that was kind of weird. I went to work for the Greening Coalition.
The what?
The Greening Coalition, a group that's lobbying for money for greening in the city. And